This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, who's ready to go back to the future with today's guest? Huey Lewis, lead vocalist for Bay Area, California rock and rollers, Huey Lewis in the News. We're going to take you back in time to break down the writing, recording, and release of the band's first number one hit, The Power of Love, taken from the 1985 soundtrack for the movie, Back to the Future. Some of the greatest songs are written super quickly, and this one is no exception. The music was presented to Huey by guitarist Chris Hayes, and Huey fills us in how he wrote the lyrics and melody in one fell swoop, listening on headphones to an instrumental version of the song through a Walkman cassette player while he was jogging. Submitting a song for a movie was uncharted territory for the band, and they were unsure at first if The Power of Love would even work for the film. Well, let's just say it worked so well, and climbed up the top 40 radio charts so quickly, that production of the movie was rushed to release the film sooner than planned. That is something I can't recall ever happening with another movie. This song was massive, and opened up an already huge band to an even bigger audience. And Huey made his acting debut in the film, something he thought he'd never have the opportunity to do. Super cool. For all this and a whole lot more, stay right here in the present with us. This is a good one.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
So Huey, how's it going?
Good. We're good.
I want to give the listeners a little background here on you and the band. You started with a Bay Area band called Clover throughout the 70s with keyboardist Sean Hopper. And after Clover disbanded, you put together a band called Huey Lewis and the American Express, later changing the name to Huey Lewis and the News, and releasing the first self-titled album in 1980. Sean was the only member besides yourself of Clover to join this band, where you guys secured a deal with Chrysalis Records. And the follow-up album, 1982's Picture This, is where I was introduced to the band. Both 95YNF out of Tampa and Wink FM 97 out of Fort Myers, Florida, were both spinning the heck out of this killer track called Do You Believe in Love?
Love you all over.
Love that song. In 1983, saw the release of Sports, the album that shot the band into superstardom, bolstered by radio and MTV staples The Heart of Rock and Roll, Heart and Soul, I Want a New Drug, and If This Is It. In between Sports and its follow-up album from 1986 called Four, there was a little movie you may have heard of that came out in 1985 called Back to the Future, and the band provided two songs of the film, Back in Time and the band's first number one hit, The Power of Love, which we're going to break down today. In all, the band has released 10 albums, the most recent being Weather from 2020. And I just gotta say, not a fair weather fan here. I loved all your stuff over the years. Some of my favorite tracks ever were the record you did 91, Hard at Play. There was a couple days off and a few of those songs were just killer.
Cool. I like it.
So yeah, I just it was really hard to narrow down a song from your catalog. You have so many iconic hits, so many that I love. I love the album, the deep cuts, Finally Found a Home. It might be my favorite song you ever did, but I feel like we had to go with Power of Love. And I saw the documentary where you talked about this, and even though the story's kind of out there, I'm going to dig a little deeper here, and I have so many questions. How did this start? You're in between Sports and Four. Was this song laying around from Sports that you had, or was it written specific for the film?
It was begun before the film. Bob Zemeckis, who directed Back to the Future, Steven Spielberg, who produced it, and Bob Gale, who wrote it, whose story it was, although Zemeckis is co-writer also, and Neil Canton as well, they asked to take a meeting with us at Amblin Entertainment when it was Amblin had just started. And they said, listen, we've written this movie and the lead character is a guy called Marty McFly. And in real life, his favorite band would be Huey Lewis and the News. So we thought, how would you like to write a song for the film? I said, wow, I'm flattered, you know, but I don't know how to write for film necessarily. I said, and frankly, I don't fancy writing a song called Back to the Future. They said, oh, no, we don't care. It can be called anything. We just want one of your songs. I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll just give it a think and send you the next thing we're working on. And they go, great to meet you. So then, boom. So I went back and Chris had already written the chord progression for Power Love, although it just started with the verse, the minor part. I liked it a lot. And I boom, boom. And I remember I went on a run, a little jog, and I took a Walkman. Remember Sony Walkmans?
Absolutely.
And I wrote the words in one run, one jog. And then I wrote it all down. And then Chris and I got it together and we kind of demoed it up a little bit. And Johnny had some great arrangement ideas. And then we made this demo. And my recollection is we made this demo, sent it to Zemeckis, and he loved it. But that's not Zemeckis' recollection.
Michael, quick question for you. Was Back in Time written prior to Power of Love?
We hadn't written Back in Time yet. I had not even seen the movie. I had not read a script. I had nothing. They just told me, hey, this guy, we just want a song. We want one of your songs. Zemeckis' recollection is I sent the demo to him. And he said, yeah, but it's good, but it's not up enough, quote unquote. And I gave that a big think. And we got together. And then Johnny came up with the intro. The big major bam, bam,
bam. Oh, yeah. Bam.
We put that on there and then he loved it. By then, I had seen the script now. I hadn't seen the movie yet, but I'd seen the script. They'd sent me the script. And I thought there's no real love object in it. I didn't think it was gonna work for their movie.
Yeah.
And then but they loved it and they obviously used it well.
That's so cool. And of course, you were in the movie playing the teacher at the talent show. And I got to tell you, I was probably 12 when the movie came out. My friends are telling me, and of course, you were all over MTV. I knew what you looked like, but I'm like, he's not in the movie. I had to rewind that scene, of course, on VHS, Huey, to rewind the scene to look at you because they had you, you know, in a wig and everything.
Yeah.
And just
and that was part of the deal.
What was that like? Because you said you had no background in movies. That had to have been a trip.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was, interestingly, that movie was shot mostly at night because Michael J. Fox was on Family Ties and committed to doing that during the day. They started the movie Back to the Future with a different Marty McFly. Eric, I can't remember his name now, Stoltz or something. And they shot a whole bunch of it. And then they said, it is not working. We need Michael J. Fox. So they made this deal with him. And he had to do the film, you know, when he wasn't doing Family Ties.
When did the guy sleep?
And so we shot our scene at night. It was at night. And it was Bob Zemeckis' idea that it'd be kind of a clever little nod. And I thought, you know, not really. I was kind of against it, to be honest, in the very beginning. And then he said, look, and we agreed that we'd do it if it was just kind of like an in-joke. And I was uncredited and disguised, partially disguised, and it would be a little kind of cookie for people, you know, so.
Right. Well, and of course, I mean, you guys were MTV staples all over the radio, you know, from 83 when Sports was released up until 85. It was just, you were one of the bands at that point, one of the most popular bands of the 80s. Did you have any idea at all, like, you know, this could be something, this movie could be big, or this could be a big thing for us?
This made a lot of sense for us because Sports had just come out and we'd had five hits on Sports. we were out touring and all this stuff, and we didn't have another record really ready, you know, yet. And so this was going to be a nice thing to kind of buy the time while we did another record.
Sure.
I do remember that we cut the song, and then we went on tour in Europe, and then we came back and mixed it. And I remember when I cut the vocal, and I cut it at the record plant in Studio D in the record plant. I cut the lead vocal and I sang it. And then I came back around the studio to just check it and comp it. And we were doing it. And I finally got it kind of the one master vocal. And then I just played it back to listen to it. And Sean, our keyboard player, was in back of me. And he said, you know what? I said, what? That's the best thing we've ever done. He said. I remember thinking, that's the weirdest thing I ever heard. Really? What? I would never think of anything like that. Like, what's the best thing we've ever, you know, because we were producing our record, so we're just in it, in the middle of it, just trying to make everything sound as good as possible. I have no concept of what's good or bad or what's our best or worst. But Sean said that right after that play. It was pretty interesting. And I thought, oh, wow, maybe it is pretty good.
Yeah, well, and I guess the guy in your own band that you were in a previous band with, one of your best friends, he's not going to blow smoke up your backside. Yeah, right. So there was something, there was something there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. Well, you know, I want to say bands were more prolific back then because there was money to be made on records, especially you guys. I mean, picture this was a hit. And then, of course, everything went through the roof with you guys. I was surprised to hear you say you really didn't have anything laying around in between. Were you guys prolific? Did you have a lot of demos and things in the vaults?
Yeah, but we'd written three records already. You know, it wasn't just sports. We'd written three records. I mean, our first record has got Some of My Lives Are True is a great song that we missed. I know you think that I've been singing you along, and that I told you I'd go. But sooner or later, when you say, love goes away, you're gonna realize some of my lies are true. We got a bunch of great songs on there that we made.
The original version of Trouble in Paradise is on the first record.
That's right. Don't Ever Tell Me That You Love Me is kind of a nice one, too. And we miss that a little bit, you know. We just cut everything real fast. And so after writing three records, I mean, you know, look, we wrote a song called Heart of Rock and Roll. Well, you can't write a song called the Soul of Rock and Roll, can you? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, how many songs can you write with rock and roll in the title?
Yeah.
Right? So that's gone. So, you know, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to be as prolific, you know, late. And the other thing is when you're hungry and you're up and coming and you're still anonymous. Now, when you become a celebrity and stuff, your world kind of collapses a little bit and there's not as much experience on which to draw for raps, you know. So I don't know, it just gets harder.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure you've heard this too. I loved you guys, and I can't think of anybody growing up. There was always haters when you're kids. I don't like this band, I don't like that band. I can't recall anybody ever bagging on Huey Lewis in the News. You were kind of like that all-American guy. You looked like the bar band down the street. You didn't have the long hair and the makeup. You were just real, you know. It was cool. Was there ever any pressure? Was there pressure from the record labels to dress you up and be that thing?
Well, see, the thing is, we started actually just before music television. We actually formed in 78, you know, 77, mm-hmm. 78, 79. Our first record came out in 80, January of 80, but we, you know, we formed it before music television. So, you know, I don't have any tattoos. If this had been 5 years later, I'd be tattooed head to foot if I thought it was going to help. You know, I mean, would I have pierced my earrings or my nose? Or of course, in a heartbeat. But in my day, it was an audio thing. It really wasn't much of a visual, not near as much of a visual thing as it is. I mean, let's go way back. Music used to be the domain of blind artists.
Uh-huh.
And now, I mean, lots of them, you know what I mean? And now it's much harder to make the video. And so, you know, so, I mean, things change.
Sure, sure. And one other thing I want to touch on before we jump into the song and start breaking it down. Was there ever any pressure? I mean, again, the first record, I know there was a producer, but ever since then, you were self-producing these records. You know, was Chrysalis ever in there barking at you guys, Chrysalis Records, to, you know, your A&R person, to be, hey, we need a producer? Because, of course, you know, you had a I want to say minor hit, you know, Picture This was a hit, but it was nothing like Sports. Like, I guess they entrusted in you. You guys were getting good sounds, and heck, you had played forever together. You were tight as hell.
Yeah, our first record was produced by Bill Schnee.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't do anything. And so our second record, fortunately, you get two records. You wouldn't get two records today.
No way.
And then our second record needed to be a hit. If you think back, this is 1981 now. There's no internet. There's no jam band. And even FM radio. FM radio, which started in the 60s as a play anything you want, disc jockey from Big Daddy Todd Donahue and KMPX and all that. By the mid-70s, FM radio was completely programmed and was the format.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interestingly, top 40, the term top 40, comes from a programmer, I think in Fresno, California, who opined that with the advent of push button radio, now somebody, as long as you didn't play anything that they didn't like, they wouldn't switch the channel. But now they had the capability of switching the channel when they heard something they didn't like. So the idea was narrow your playlist. Just top 40. Mm-hmm. Play the top 40 songs all the time. Well, by 1981, CHR, which was the FM version of top 40, called Contemporary Hit Radio, was what that was. And there were really only 28 songs, maybe 29 songs that they played. And the top five got 8 or 9 plays a day. And number 29 only got 1 a day. So the playlists were even more narrow. They were so narrow, it was unbelievable. And that was our job. You needed to have a hit single on one of those 28 records, or you weren't going to be able to make records again. So that was our job.
Wow.
And so we wanted to produce ourselves because we knew we'd have to make commercial decisions, and we wanted to live with those commercial decisions. And we wanted to do that ourselves. And our manager believed in us, and he convinced the record company. Fortunately, they were 6,000 miles away in London, and they were a small label. And so we produced Picture This ourselves, and had a kind of a tickle with Do You Believe in Love? Then we were off on our own. But we really came into our own on Sports, you know. Although Picture This could have been a bigger record if they had, you know, the first single was Do You Believe in Love? And they were so enamored of us as a band, because we were a good band. We had a depth to us that was, because, you know, we had an R&B side to us, rhythm and blues.
Yeah.
And so they thought, okay, we got the hit now with these guys. Let's go right to the heavy stuff. And our second single was Hope You Love Me Like You Say You Do, which is a slow R&B ballad.
Oh, yes, I'm strong, but I'm weak when it comes down.
And it did not crack the top 20. And so Working for a Living was our third single from that record.
Yeah.
And it was too late. We lost our momentum, and it was not really a hit either. But it's gone on to become a really big song and covered by a lot of people, and probably would have been a hit had it been released second.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the strategy. And so, but from then on, they were going to let us produce our records because we were successful.
There wasn't a lot of bands back then, especially in the 80s, 70s and 80s, that were producing their own stuff. You had you guys, Prince, maybe the Eagles, but, you know, they wanted to bring bona fide hit-making producers in. And the fact, and I look back and I look at artists aforementioned Prince and you guys, you knew they were just stellar, killer musicians that knew what they were doing, because the labels wanted to meddle in everything back then, as you know. So the fact that they left you alone is just goes to show how great you guys were.
Yeah. And they were Chrysalis Records. It wasn't CBS, and so we were able to manhandle them a little bit. And we were literally 6,000 miles away. And my manager went to bat for us. And we weren't spring chickens. You know, we'd made a record with Schnee. We'd worked with Schnee. I'd worked with Mutt Lange in Britain and done all kinds of sessions and stuff. So,
yeah,
you know, we'd made records. So, you know.
Yeah, you had been around. Well, we're going to jump into the track now. It's 3 minutes and 53 seconds. I know there was some remixes. There was like a 7-minute dance remix at some point of this and different versions for radio. But we're talking about the one that was on the soundtrack here. 3 minutes, 53 seconds. Starts with a cymbal hit, and the whole band is in for a 13-second intro with the chorus progression with that keyboard riff you were talking about a moment ago. And it's just, I mean, how much more catchy can you get than that? It's just uplifting. And when the producers came back to you and said, we need something a little up, you delivered with this one. The keyboard hook over the band is killer. The guitar sound is overdriven with maybe like a phaser on it. It's such a killer tone. The bass is super funky. And right at the 13-second mark, there's this ah that you let out. It's almost like a whisper. And then the whole feel here changes. The horn stabs come in, which I want to talk about the horns briefly. Was that the Tower of Power section on this track?
No, that's synth horns, fake horns. That's a CS-80 with a, believe it or not, that's how old that is, with a horn patch.
Okay. I thought there was horns with the keyboards there.
From then on, you know, we have a horn section. Live, there's horns there. Live, there's always been horns. And there's live versions with horns there. But on the original record, there's no horns.
I was fooled. I thought that was horns mixed in with keyboards there. I love what the guitar and bass are doing here, playing off one another. And the guitar is super clean, almost with a chorusy effect on it.
And it's a very counterpointy part. It's not an easy part to play. Chris is, you know, a fantastic guitar player. And he's a jazzer and everything. I mean, that's typical Chris. It's a gorgeous little counterpoint thing, yeah.
It is awesome, and I'm going to talk about that counter riff you're talking about in a second. I'm going to get into that because there's something I want to touch on. But at 21 seconds, we're in verse one.
The power of love is a curious thing. Make a one man weep, make another man sing. Change your heart to a little white dove.
Power of love is a curious thing. Make one man weep, make another man sing. Change a hawk to a little white dove. More than a feeling, that's the power of love. And we get a little soft from you there, Huey, at the end of that. And there's a half measure turnaround. And the second part of verse one is tougher than diamonds, rich like cream. Stronger and harder than a bad girl's dream. Make a bad one good, make a wrong one right. Power of love will keep you home at night. What's going on here?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's just like the song said. It's funny, you know, the little you said in there.
Yeah.
And the I did because it was cool. I do that on a number of songs, actually. It's kind of a little, I can't help. I like it a lot.
It's awesome.
I like it a lot.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. Our journey back in time with Huey Lewis will continue after a few words from our sponsors.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities. From easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock, DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
If you like Chris DeMakes a Podcast, I'm going to assume that you like music podcasts. And if you like music podcasts, check out One Hit Thunder. Each week, we dive into a one-hit wonder, and along the way, we gain some knowledge and have some laughs. Lou Bega, Crazy Town, Harvey Danger, The New Radicals, A-ha. We're over 100 episodes in now, and to paraphrase the great Matthew Wilder, nothing's going to break our stride. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods. And now, back to the future. Podcast.
But the is from just getting pitch in between getting ready. Boom. And they just, and Claremountain left it in, you know. Bob Claremountain mixes most of our records, and he's a genius. I mean,
Bob's a monster.
He's just really, really good.
Yeah.
And another advantage of having an outside mixer is a guy who wasn't there when you recorded this. It's a new objective look on everything. You know, he wasn't there when the music was cut. And he doesn't see the stitches, if you know what I mean. The sutures. And sometimes, you know, a part which was really difficult to cut, you'll tend to underbalance because you remember what a pain it was to cut it. But he'll go, wow, that's great, and put it up real loud, you know. And so his perspective is invaluable on that stuff. And that's an example of that.
Well, no, and I was going to ask, was that at sometime what I refer to as vocal scatting, where you're just you're kind of warming up a little bit, as you said, or trying to find a pitch, and it was left in there. And that adds to that realness that I feel is missing so much today when you're copying, pasting in Pro Tools, those little things.
You have to capture performances. And when you do it, when you do comps and all that stuff, you know, there's a breath that happens. People, when they sing, they go, and there's a little breath noise in there that's important.
Yeah.
And if you don't get that breath noise, if you're just cutting in the lyrics, it ends up antiseptic.
For sure. And a lot of that I feel is missing today too. A lot of times you get that breathiness on the slower ballads, and you almost feel like you're there in the sure. room with the person as they're singing. It adds such a personal note to it.
Power Love wasn't cut with Pro Tools. So
No, not at all. Which
pure analog right there, baby.
Which again, you know, when Chris brought this riff to the band, was this a first take at the lyrics that came out of you, or what was the inspiration behind these lyrics?
He gave me a tape with a progression. I listened to it on a Walkman and immediately had this idea. And I went on a little run, you know, a little jog with my Walkman, and I wrote the lyric in one jog. I had it completely done in one 3 mile run.
Like the biggest hit of your career. It's like, that's like I've always said as a musician, sometimes you channel stuff that you don't know where it comes from. Right.
And I wrote, you know, the muse comes up, and we were quite prolific in those days. And what's interesting is because I would write them and we'd write them and then record them. And so, and I wouldn't pore over them much. I would just keep going, you know, and just keep new ones. And so I didn't really rewrite enough. And this happens to me very long when I get, along, I get down the line, I think years later, I think, man, I should have spent a little more time on that song. You know, it could have been better. And I just kind of dashed off a lot of them. But I mean, like Working for a Living is an example. You know, I mean, that was my first take on that lyric.
Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living.
I could have redone that a little better, maybe. I don't know.
Isn't that amazing how artists, they the great ones at least, always want to keep pushing it. And you'll hear a song on the radio, or you hear a song that you did, and you're like, I could have done that better. But to the audience, to the fans, that's the song. It can't be better.
Yeah, no. And you're dead right. Every time I hear a song, it's always something. It's like, it's either the mix or the arrangement or the lyric or something could be better. No question.
That harmony, I should have had the harmony come in there. It could have been better. I know, I feel you. Well, something else I wrote here I wanted to touch on, and we're talking about that counter guitar part that Chris had come up with in these verses. Right. I love that the band is in a groove all its own with that, but your vocal melody is floating with its own thing. It's almost like two different songs at once are happening with the verse here, if that makes sense. It's almost like they shouldn't work. I mean, you know, dint, 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 you know, what the guitar's doing there.
Yeah, well, that counterpoint move he's got is really interesting. So they move at different times, and that
it's kind of a
polyrhythmic figure there that he plays, and it's neat.
A lot of times when you hear a great riff, let's look at Iron Man by Sabbath. Ozzy's melody line is copying that. You know, you could have went in here and done a derivative of that right. Counterpoint guitar, but your melody line is just sits on top of this. It's incredible. Was that a first stab on that jog? Was that what you heard?
Yeah, it was almost like, for me, it was almost like an Al Green thing. I heard it like an Al Green thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like Take Me to the River or something. Kind of an Al Green thing.
I don't know why she treated me so bad.
And that's kind of how I wrote it.
Interesting. I met that with the utmost respect. It's like two different songs. If you were to solo them, you're like, oh, you know, because there's so many melodies that could go over that. But what works with it? I don't think you could have picked a better one. I like that there's no pre-chorus here. You're just right into chorus one. It's just shy of the minute mark, 58 seconds. You're back to the intro chord progression with the keyboard hook here.
We don't need money. Don't take fame. Don't need no credit card.
Interestingly enough, there's still no harmonies in this song, and we'll touch on that later when they come in, which I can't believe a song this big, you guys could sing a telephone book and make it sound good. Your harmonies were fantastic. This song's massive. There's no harmonies at all. The lyric here is "don't need money," which is the only time it says "don't need money" in the song too, which is cool. "Don't take fame, don't need no credit card to ride this train. It's strong and it's sudden and it's cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life." The band stops, and you say, "That's the power of love." And now we're back into the verse groove, and you get the hook again. "That's the power of love." It's awesome. Was there any talk amongst the band members? You're in cutting the track of, there should be some harmonies here. Or was it just, you always heard it as a single vocal?
There might be some two-part. Is there?
I think there's some doubles going on here, but I'm speaking of actual harmonies, you know, like thirds and stuff.
There isn't. There's not even any two-part.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any. I don't know why. That's interesting, right?
it's very interesting. Especially
I actually never really, until the "feel the power of love" there's.
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't even really thought about that, but you're right.
I mean, you look at all the hits you guys had. They all have harmonies. You guys were just sang so great. Your rhythm and blues band, you could cut it live. Of course there's going to be harmonies. And I never realized it, much like you, until the last 2 days. I'm dissecting. I'm going line by line of this thing. I'm in headphones. Finally, it dawned on me, there's no damn harmony of this song. Right. You know, until way later, which is just so interesting. And again, it doesn't need it, obviously, but I just found that to be very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I got to admit, I hadn't really thought of that myself. it just doesn't call for it. I mean, now that I think about it, I don't know what we would do. And you don't want a call and response thing. And then it's too,
right.
Too doo-wop-y. And it's not. It's just contemporary. So
the other thing that's so interesting with this is that it's none of the choruses are ever the same. And lyrically, they change. A lot of times you want the chorus to keep hitting you over the head. And I found that to be really cool with this, is the chorus is never the same, but it keeps you hooked in. Verse two comes right off the heels of chorus one. You're just right back into it.
first time you feel it, it might make you sad. Next time you feel it, it might make you mad. But you'll be glad, baby, when you found that the power makes the world go round.
Amen.
Do you recall that maybe this verse here was going to be up at the top and they were switched around, or was it written kind of just like this from when you wrote it?
I don't recall, because I got a crappy memory anyway, but I'm sure, I think Sean said I had a slightly different lyric, but you know, I work on this stuff in my head, and before I sing it, I have to know it like a haiku. It needs to be part of me. And it's easier when you write them. The songs, they're not that much lyrics in a song. You can memorize it easy. So
yeah.
I just work on it in my head. And I think I can't find any notes or any of that stuff. But I did. I had reams of stuff somewhere.
Well, and I'll tell you, it's amazing that the song sticks with you or sticks with me or any listener and like it does. Because again, the choruses are all different. The lyrics change. And a lot of times, you know, that'll throw you off. But in this instance, it called for this. It's perfect. Chorus two, case in point, changes here. And it don't take money, don't take fame. Don't need no credit card to ride this train. It's strong and it's sudden. It can be cruel sometimes, but it might just save your life. And I had written here that, you know, some words change here, from the other chorus. And I had written that I think a lot of this has to do with bands back then, especially your band, that was rooted, as you touched on before, rooted in rhythm and blues.
Right.
Because the art of jamming is lost. I don't know many bands that could get on stage and ad lib a 15, 20 minute jam thing. Rhythm and blues bands did that. And a lot of times when you would do that, you would kind of ad lib a different lyric here or there. And that's what I feel with the song. It sounds fresh. It doesn't sound stagnant, copy and paste like it is today. I can feel that rhythm and blues band, even though this is a pop single, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get that. I like doing that, changing it up, chorus to chorus. You know, the band used to always do that. Oddly enough, they would, you know, there was little 5-beat measures. You know, we do that a lot.
Yes,
there aren't any in Power Love, or six beat measures.
Yeah,
a measure and a half or something. And Harder Rock and Roll has that. You know.
Yes.
No place that I'd rather be. Where else can you do a half a million things all at a quarter to three?
It's just kind of fun. It's like little things for guys to discover who work in the song club, almost. I mean, I'm kind of two minds that way. Sometimes it's hard to get, you know, it's hard because you want it to be just a straight four. But once you get it, it's kind of a cool little thing, you know. So, I don't know. We do that a little bit. I think it's to please ourselves somehow and leave little cookies for other people who want to work up the song.
Yeah, no, and it's great. It keeps it from being stagnant, and I like those knee-jerk reactions in songs. Sometimes you're like, whoa, what just happened, you know?
And
sometimes you don't even know what happened. You just know that it makes you feel different. And that's why I love dissecting songs. I can go back and go, oh, I get it now. As I'm really looking at it on paper, it's because, you know, this has five sets of lyrics here versus four in the first time. That's why it makes you feel different, but you don't realize it as the song's passing by. The bridge in this song is killer. The first harmonies come in and vocal pads of the song come in right here. And what a departure this part is. It feels totally different from the rest of the song. Kind of harkens back to something like Stuck on You or If This Is It, this bridge part. It doesn't really sound like it goes with the rest of the song, which is great. It does go with the rest of the song, but it's such a great departure. The lyric is, they say that all in love is fair. And that's where those vocal pads are coming back. And then you're alone on the line. Yeah, but you don't care.
Oh, there's harmony there.
Yes.
You know what to do.
Oh, yeah. Behind it.
So there's our harmony. And by the way, that bridge, Chris, that's Chris's bridge, and the chords are gorgeous in there, I think.
They're great.
And he liked it so much that when he originally wrote the song, the music, that was a major part. That happened again, at least twice, maybe three times. And Johnny, to his credit, said, you know what? That's a bridge. That's a little two, this, boom, boom, boom. And Johnny arranged that way, like that, so that it's like rock relief, if you will, and boom, and you hear those beautiful chords, and it's it works great as a bridge.
Well, yeah, and you guys have always had like that 50s doo-wop thing going on with your vocals. You know, Bad as Bad comes to mind from the Sports record. Those backing pads aren't locked with your lead vocal, and it kind of pushes and pulls there, and that really adds again that realism, and it's so great. But you know what to do when it gets a hold of you, and with a little help from above, and then it goes into the next part. It comes back to the verse progression, and you say, "You'll feel the power of love. You'll feel the power of love. Can you feel it? Mm-hmm."
You feel the power of love.
This part is great because you're getting the hook lyric in here twice without going back for a full chorus. You're getting right. That power of love in, which I think is great.
We agonized over that, but come from the guitar solo and then just power into the chorus. What the heck? I kept thinking we were maybe needed a new verse there to go to the chorus, but enough already.
Well, and I think that you, when you were talking about the bridge being a relief part, I almost feel like the big relief part in this song is the guitar solo, because
right. This
part, again, it doesn't sound like it was overthought. The guitar solo is not doing this 80s guitar wankery, super fast stuff. It's a very mellow solo over the verse progression. It's like eight measures. The solo is super tasteful. There is some really cool rhythmic drum cymbal things going on here that aren't in the regular verses, but this solo is 33 seconds long. It's 1/6 of the song length, basically, but it's just kind of moving along because you know the chorus is coming back at some point. I think this is the perfect relief part in the song.
Yeah, it works good. It's just the transition from this part to the chorus is a bit abrupt. You know, you go from minor to major and it goes bam. It's a little abrupt, but what the heck? I mean, I couldn't figure out writing and singing another verse, you see. And then I thought, well, now that's much ado about nothing. We've already made our point. So that's why I did that. Just go.
No, I think you're getting the verse, albeit with the guitar solo, you're getting the feel of it. It's enough. I don't think that there, as you just said, didn't need to be any more information or any lyrics there. And now we're major again. It gets us into chorus three. Again, the lyrics change here. You know, and I don't even want to say this is a double chorus. It's just kind of a big chorus here that kind of ends and, of course, fades out later. But the lyric is, don't take money and don't take fame. Don't need no credit card to ride this train. And I love how the melody changes on this chorus. The melodies, you right. go up there. And that's just, by this point in the song, it lifts again. It's great. Don't need no credit card to ride this train. Tougher than diamonds and stronger than steel. You won't feel nothing. Till you feel. I love that line. You feel the power. Just feel the power of love. That's the power. That's the power of love. Now we get these killer Huey Lewis and the News harmonies on this next line. This might be the perfect tie-up of any song ever. Feel the power of love, of that little tag you do there in the harmonies. It's so good, and the song fades out there. Again, thinking of this last chorus, I know it's a long time ago. Was this exactly how it was, or did it take you a minute to figure this out? Because it's kind of a strange chorus, the way that you end it.
Well, I just improvised that at the end. I just would sing along, and I just improvised. I knew I had to have a little, I think I wrote the diamonds part, and then just improvised, feel the power of love, feel the power of love, feel the power of love, you know. And then when we added the harmonies is what we did. We just, I had already sung the vocal. We didn't plan it that way. We just harmonized the lead vocal.
That's so great. So
pretty easy, really.
The song comes out, the movie's a smash, which, you know, a lot of times there was a lot of great songs that ended up on soundtracks to movies that flopped. And the song never got a chance, you know?
This song was the fastest rising. When we released it, it went to number one in 9 weeks, which is real. You know, in those days, you release a record and you get most added. Every week there are these tip sheets that would tell you where you're at. Most added. So it got most added. Then it got most biggest mover. And then it got most plays and most phones and all this stuff. Went straight to the top, Power Love, the biggest hit we ever had. And the movie wasn't out. The movie is not out. And to this day, the time between the end of principal shooting and the release of a movie is a long time sometimes. Principal, they have to edit the movie, then they have to market the movie, they have to get it ready, then they got to release it. The time between principal shooting of Back to the Future and the release of Back to the Future is the shortest time of any major picture ever.
Wow.
It was 9 weeks. And the reason it was is because the song from the movie was steaming up the charts. And Universal said, we got to get this movie out there. And they
That's backwards.
Exactly. And they rushed it up. And the day the movie came out, Power of Love was number one when the movie was released. And Bob Zemeckis will back me up on this. The song was the propeller for the movie in the beginning. Then, of course, the movie was a huge smash and was wonderful for the song.
That's so awesome. One last thing I want to touch on before we wrap up. You know, sports, you guys were on the road forever, 5 singles on that record, which I didn't include in the intro. Of course, Walking on a Thin Line was another huge song from that record, one of my favorites. But you're on the road. This comes up. You record Power of Love. I mean, 4 came out in 86. I'm assuming you're starting to write for the 4 record, but did you get any pressure from label or management? Like, listen, Power of Love's number one. We got to send you guys back out on tour. Did you go back out on the road?
Well, they wanted another record is what they wanted. They wanted a record right away because the record label, we'd sold, you know, 8 million or something with sports. And now Power of Love was a huge smash. And Power of Love was not on a Chrysalis record. It was not on a Huey Lewis and the News record. Mm-hmm. It was bought by Amblin, by Universal. And it was on MCA, I guess. So I can't remember. In fact, it only appeared on the soundtrack album of Back to the Future, which was a lousy record. Had one other tune on it, and a bunch of short music, and never. I think it's gold now, but it never went platinum. Didn't go platinum. Interestingly, right? This is Back to the Future, the soundtrack album, Back to the Future. It didn't even go platinum. The next soundtrack album after that was Flashdance. It sold 13 million records. Then Dirty Dancing, which did 15 million records. So the notion that the Back to the Future soundtrack with Power of Love sold under 1 million units is outrageous.
It is, but at the same time, as you know, soundtracks were notoriously horrible back then. You might get one cut that was decent, one or two, and the rest was filler.
With this one, they had a number one single.
Yeah.
This was MCA, and they really dropped the ball. We weren't allowed to put Power of Love on a Huey Lewis and News record. So it's in America, but they said, you can do it overseas in the rest of the world. So we added Power of Love to 4 album in the rest of the world. In America, Power of Love is only on Back to the Future soundtrack.
Right. I had read that it was on the Japanese release of 4. That-
on any release of 4, any international release of 4, Power of Love appears. That's why when we play in London or Paris or Japan or any of those places, Jacob's Ladder, Perfect World, Do It All for My Baby, these are much bigger songs than One New Drug, Hard to Rock and Roll, and If This Is It. Isn't that weird? Stuck With You is a bigger song than If This Is It, because it's on 4 and where Power Love is.
That's incredible. Well, and a lot of soundtracks, labels would put it out, whatever record company, Columbia Records would put out the soundtrack, and they didn't want your song somewhere else. They wanted the soundtrack to sell. And again, to your point, the fact that the song was number one, this massive hit, and it sold under 1 million copies, the actual soundtrack to Back to the Future. There must have been some other stinkers on there, as there was. But Huey, I just want to thank you so much and congratulate you for all of your success. I've just been honored to speak with you about this today. Thank you.
You bet. Didn't hurt a bit. It was a real fun.
Hey, everybody. This is not it for Krista Makes a Podcast. There's plenty more after a few words from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Do you enjoy the content and production of Krista Makes a Podcast? Do you have an idea for a podcast or an existing podcast that you'd like to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. At weknowpodcasting.com, we have over 25 years of combined experience in the pod field, and we're ready to help you succeed in the golden era of podcasting.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Layla Brisbois from Orlando, Florida. I was eating at the restaurant at House of Blues Orlando on the last night of our recent tour with Newfound Glory, and I heard this voice coming from the other side of the room. It was Layla's, and it was killer. Her music can be found on iTunes and Spotify, and here's a snippet of her song, Shudder.
You already got my mind, you already got my time, now tell me, what's it gonna be? Ooh, ooh, you can't.
Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, were you a little bit starstruck by the fact that you were doing a podcast with Huey Lewis?
I think so. I know so. I told you before we started rolling that I just had a night where I was tossing and turning. I was in my head. Obviously, never met him before, talked to him. You know, I've heard through the grapevine he's a super nice guy. I've heard he's hard to deal with. You never know what you're getting. I was a little starstruck today, Chris.
When we got on there, I told him, man, I got to tell you, the first cassette I ever got as a kid was the Perfect World album. And then when you guys were recording, I realized to myself, wait a second, the song is called Perfect World. The album is called Small World. So the whole time you're recording, I'm thinking to myself, oh man, I feel so dumb. And I had to tell him after you guys were done, like, yo, man, I do realize the album's called Small World. He didn't even remember what I said, but he's like, no, the song's Perfect World. I'm like, yeah, but the album's Small World. Anyway, I was definitely starstruck by him. I mean, as a kid growing up, loving Huey Lewis in the News, seeing Huey Lewis being this, he was always really funny and charismatic in the music videos. He just seemed larger than life to me always.
Yeah, and he came out at a time where, I mean, you had some guys that were kind of, you know, dressed in their street clothes. Phil Collins comes to mind, but, you know, he was just kind of like your everyday next door neighbor, you know, Huey Lewis. Just kind of like, oh, there's, you know, Mr. Lewis going to work. He's got his button down and his tie on, and he had this, you know, kind of short conservative haircut. As he said, he didn't do the tattoo thing, the piercing thing, and I think that is what made them stand out, when it made them kind of special.
Yeah, it was just kind of like the really handsome, good singing guy next door that you want to be friends with. I think that's like a really good way to put it, is when I saw that guy on TV as a kid, I was kind of like, I want to be that guy.
Well, I you know, as you know, Chris, we went back and forth. I think Power of Love was the song to do. But man, what a laundry list of hits this band has. I mean, so many songs, so many great songs, and they were part of the soundtrack to my childhood. So my head was spinning for a couple of days, but we zeroed in on Power of Love, and what a great story.
I would love to have him come back every five episodes and talk about another Huey Lewis in the News hit. There's so many. I mean, our first instinct was I Want a New Drug, which I think that would have been amazing too. But we're like, man, we got to do the Power of Love.
Yeah, and I was a bit apprehensive because the story's kind of out there. They did the documentary where he talked about it. But, you know, I kind of thought, you know what, that probably no one went as in-depth as we were going to go on the show here. And I think we got a lot more out of him. I thought it was really cool that he had admitted that, yeah, I never thought that there was no harmonies in that chorus. Those kinds of things, which gets me excited that I could tell a performer of a song they wrote almost 40 years ago that you know, they don't know something about it.
Yeah, I thought that was great. Wow, I saw the movies that made us about Back to the Future. I knew a lot of the background on this song too. Maybe some people listening did too. But that story about the fact that the success of the song pushed the release of one of the biggest movies of all time, that's insane. I've never heard of that before. That is crazy.
You haven't heard it because it's unheard of. It doesn't happen. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, goes to show you, people, it had to be a phenomenon like Dirty Dancing or Flashdance, as he had mentioned, for soundtracks to sell. They notoriously just were bad. They were record company write-offs. It's like they might have one or two good hits, but it was filled with a lot of filler, bad B-sides. And, you know, a lot of times bands were reluctant to give a great song to a soundtrack for fear that the movie would flop and it wouldn't do anything. This was just the opposite. This song was so big that they rushed the film's release.
Right. It was like the song and the movie were working in conjunction with each other, which is crazy, all the crossovers. I guess I didn't realize that Huey Lewis had a cameo in the movie too. How wild is that to not only have this huge, I don't know, gigantic music career, but even beyond that, you are immortalized in one of the biggest, most popular movies of all time. I think that is just incredible.
Yeah, no, and he even mentioned it was his first foray in any of this. So when they asked him to write a song for a movie, he's like, I've never scored a movie or written songs. I don't think in those terms. And the fact that he even said there was really no central, I guess Michael J. Fox had a love interest in the movie, which ended up at some point, I think, being his mother from years later. But there was really no central love story to this song, for the Power of Love. But just the message of Power of Love, I think, is universal enough that it worked with the film.
Yeah, I mean, the Power of Love, even in this song, even within the lyrics, it's kind of the power of love. I know I've seen Huey cite this before, that it's like the love of family and stuff, which that is a theme in it. Love isn't always just romantic.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of forms of love. There's just a overarching love of humanity and stuff. So I don't think it always has to be the romantic thing. On a nerdy level, Chris, I love that we found out that those aren't real horns in the song. Those are actually, as we've discussed, I think in the after party we discussed this, but I feel like I've been discussing it on so many podcasts lately. That's the Yamaha CS80 that was used on so many hit songs with like a horns patch.
It was. And you know, those stabs there, I thought the keyboard was still there. The main keyboard riff, that sound was still there mixed with real horns. I was fooled. I'm 0 for 1 on the episode. I got defeat to makes going on here, but yeah, I thought that they were, there was horns there with it. So that was neat to know, to find out.
Yeah, it's surprising, you know, because we knew that the Tower of Power were the horn section that he toured with, right? Which I guess happened shortly after the success of this.
Yeah, I think they needed to up their ante live and just get the energy of real horns out there, because this song was so just so massive. But yeah, I'm still kind of just in shock that I talked to Huey Lewis today. What a cool thing, man.
Yeah, man, I agree. I want to keep the amazing guests coming. If you're listening to this right now and you enjoyed this episode, plus the 80-some episodes before this, you can help us out in some really easy ways. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You could text a friend or tell a friend about the show. It's as easy as that. Did you enjoy this episode? Text it to a friend. You can text the link right to them and they can check it out. And if you really want to help out, you could join our supporting cast at chrisdemakes.com. For a few bucks a month, you'll get a whole bunch of episodes of the After Party podcast. You can be a contestant on Defeat to Makes. There's a whole lot of stuff we do, and it helps the podcast continue. Just a few things you could do, just putting it out there.
Right on. Yes, thanks to each and every one of you for all your support. If you haven't already, join the Krista Makes a Podcast Facebook group. Lots of fun in there where you can interact with like-minded listeners of the show. We have a good time over there. And if you haven't already, please give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. Want to thank this week's guest, Huey Lewis from Huey Lewis and the News. What a cool chat. And we'll see you next week.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020'd.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.